Short recess. We'll come back and start with the fourth case for today.
Go ahead and let the ladies speak first.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Dennis Majeski from Terre Haute. I represent the appellant, Kenneth Keith, now Peggy Keith. I appreciate the opportunity to be before you again on this matter. This case has been around.
Yes, we have seen you before.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me?
We have seen you before.
Yes, on this case. This case has been around in one form or another now for going on its 29th year.
You got a lot of experience.
I grew up with this case. I started this case before my wife and I were married. This is my signature case.
That's a career now in more ways than one.
I'm not here for fame or fortune on this case. The issue before us, again, is whether or not Mr. Keith was granted a fair and impartial trial.
And maybe you can just start off by telling me how is it that the ALJ conducted the hearing in a way that shows that he was biased and sufficient enough so we would have to set aside the decision, because you're in a different ball game now than when you were here the first time.
Yes. Thank you, Judge. One of the, if I may relate something that didn't happen during this hearing but happened several months prior to the last hearing. Mr. Keith and myself were present for hearing. Court was assembled with the experts ready for hearing. I thought Mr. Keith was just resting. I couldn't rouse him.
Yeah.
His eyes were rolling in the back of his head. The doctor was in the hearing room. The court reporter came out. I said, could you please ask the doctor to come out? My client's in trouble. The judge refused to let the doctor come out and assist Mr. Keith. Now, it's my understanding in Indiana we have a Good Samaritan statute. I was forced to call the EMTs to have them come to the hearing room, to the waiting room at the OHA waiting room, to take Mr. Keith to the Charity Hospital in Marion County, Indiana. The judge refused. I think this is an indication of the milk of human kindness that the judge displayed towards Mr. Keith. I think Mr. Keith, as you said, Your Honor, it's a different ball game, and I think Mr. Keith was in a different ball game. I think he deserved a clean slate. And the commissioner would have the court believe that it was just Dr. Hudson's testimony that was solely the thrust of my complaint. And while certainly that's part of it, because I objected to Dr. Hudson's testimony on three separate occasions, and it would have been a very simple matter for the ALJ to just get another expert. If he wanted to avoid even the appearance of impropriety, it would have been really simple just to get another expert. Because if he was aware of the history of this case, he would have been aware of the animosity that had occurred in the prior hearings, the give and take between me and Dr. Hudson, and everything that had gone on in the past. As it was at this hearing, getting Dr. Hudson to even admit he'd been at the prior hearing, as I mentioned, was like pulling teeth. And again, there was some confusion as to when he first testified, but again, we were talking about it then, about 26 years worth of material, Your Honor. And so, the commission would say that the judge was just trying to speed the case along by getting counsel.
But this incident of your request, I thought maybe I had missed something in the brief, to have the doctor attend to him when he was sick, that's not part of this record.
No, it's not, Your Honor.
And that was never put on the record?
That was not put on the record.
So you didn't say anything, and you didn't make a record of that?
I did not make a record of that at that last hearing. I might have, Judge, but again, I was cut off by the administrative law judge, and that's precisely what I've been saying.
So did you submit anything in writing?
I did not submit anything in writing.
The administrative law judge said you couldn't speak? I mean, I take it there was no court reporter around when you had this exchange with the administrative law judge, or no tape running?
There was no tape running, if I'm getting you correctly. There was no tape running.
And you didn't file any paperwork afterward?
No. But at the subsequent hearing, and we're dealing in speculation here, but I was cut off when I tried to develop the case. And the judge said, tell me something about this case, or I want to know beyond 1982. And the questions that I was getting at were trying to develop that case to get him up to speed, to make him understand what had happened. But I was continually cut off. This court has talked about, in these cases in the past, common sense. In a case involving whether or not someone who had 7 seizures a month could go back to her prior job as a cashier, and in reversing the administrative law judge, this court said common sense tells us that she can't do that. And in a case involving the reversal of an administrative law judge for the NLRB, this court said the administrative law judge is the best one to determine the demeanor of witnesses. Well, who's the best person to determine the demeanor of the administrative law judge but the parties who appear before the administrative law judge? I've lived with this case for nearly 29 years, and I do these types of cases. And you have to understand that the situation and the nature of the types of these cases, and the fact that there is nothing built in the system to allow someone to get a change of venue from the judge. In this case, Judge Velasquez was the chief judge, so he would be the person I would write to complain about whether or not I could get a different medical expert or a different judge. There is nothing in the system set up to allow you to ensure fairness.
Now, you said that there was a problem at the hearings with the administrative law judge cutting you off and everything. Was any paperwork filed concerning that? I understand that your position is that it would have been futile given what his status was, but for purposes of making the record, did you file anything that indicated that he was cutting you off as you were trying to lay out your case?
Just what is mentioned in the record, Your Honor.
With respect to the expert?
With respect to the expert and with request to my questioning of Mr. Keith, I'd ask Mr. Keith about his medicines and what he was on currently, because that would have led to him talking about his post-polio syndrome.
But it sounds like you're talking about more than that, beyond that, that you weren't even given an opportunity to lay out your case or explain your case.
And Judge, more importantly...
Is that your position?
Yes.
Okay, and what I'm saying is there was no paper filed relative to that either, other than those two things.
And the whole situation. The whole situation, Judge.
Because it makes it, hard for us to review when we don't have anything that was presented to the ALJ. So even though in your mind it might have been futile to present something, just in terms of thinking of an appellate record, we need to have some kind of record up here.
I understand, Your Honor.
Okay.
I understand.
I'm sorry.
And the final point is his condition in 2002 is no different than his condition in 1977. In determining the condition of the appellant, the commission relies on the statement of a Dr. Manuel Kakdak, who did Mr. Keith's original surgery in May of 1977 when he was still in insured status. He was still in insured status until September of 82. And they talk about Mr. Keith having a 20% permanent disability. Dr. Kakdak was subject to discipline for doing too many surgeries, and he was accused of gross misconduct and negligence in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Skidmore.
May it please the court, my name is David Skidmore, and I represent the Commissioner of Social Security. The only evidence that Mr. Keith has brought forth to show bias is evidence of judicial rulings that the ALJ made and the ALJ's admonishments to counsel during the course of the administrative hearing, his efforts to expedite the hearing and focus on the relevant issues. This is not the kind of evidence that can support a claim of bias. A claim of bias, the test for bias is a very exacting test. It requires evidence of deep-seated antagonism, deep-seated hostility. Here, there is no evidence of any kind of antagonism or hostility, much less the deep-seated antagonism that is required to support a claim of bias.
Are you aware of this incident that counsel described?
I'm not aware of it. It's not in the record.
I mean, you know, the one where the man was having trouble.
I'm not aware of it.
Don't you think that's highly unusual?
Perhaps. I don't have... Yes. I mean, his story, it is unusual, but it's not in the record. It wasn't part of his brief. It wasn't used to support.
Well, he says even he couldn't get it in the case even if he wanted it because the judge was so prejudicial during the time that he was trying to present the case.
Well, you know, the transcript of the hearing is in the record. The transcript, the first instance that counsel refers to in being cut off was when he was raising the objection to Dr. Hudson.
Right.
As the ALJ pointed out, this was the third time he had raised the objection. He raised the objection twice in writing prior to the hearing. The ALJ said, and the argument before the hearing was that the Seventh Circuit remanded this case because it had issues with Dr. Hudson's testimony. But that's not why the Seventh Circuit remanded the case. The Seventh Circuit said nothing about Dr. Hudson's testimony. The Seventh Circuit remanded the case because it thought that ALJ Droker had exhibited the kind of antagonism and hostility that warranted setting aside his findings. What ALJ Droker had done was reach beyond the issues that were before him in the earlier proceeding, and he terminated Mr. Keith's SSI benefits. The Appeals Council corrected that action. That was clearly inappropriate. But the Seventh Circuit said nothing about Dr. Hudson's testimony. In the 1997 hearing, Dr. Hudson synthesized the evidence, made conclusions about Mr. Keith's impairments. The ALJ relied on those in his decision. In 2002, Dr. Hudson did the same thing. He talked about the evidence. He reached the conclusion that Mr. Keith did not have an impairment that satisfied a listing. He reached the conclusion that during the time period that was relevant to the claim, which was a very remote time period, 1977 to 1982, at that time there was no evidence that Mr. Keith had any limitations, residual limitations from his childhood polio. And Dr. Hudson's testimony is perfectly supported by evidence from treating and examining sources that are in the record. The treating and examining sources didn't... There was one reference to childhood polio, an arch deformity in his right foot, but Mr. Keith himself testified in 1980 that he didn't have any limitations from that arch defect. So ultimately, the claim that he was continually cut off, he made the objection about Dr. Hudson's testimony. The ALJ said, no, I'm not going, there's no basis for excluding Dr. Hudson from this hearing. In the interest of judicial economy, in the interest of proceeding with this case, which has been around for a long time, I'm going to let Dr. Hudson testify. Counsel raised the objection again at the hearing. Counsel said, look, I've already ruled on this objection. Let's move on to the merits of the case. Whether that's an admonishment or whether it's, you know, the cases, even where an ALJ or a judge expresses anger or brusqueness, that's not enough to support a claim of bias. Here, I think a fairer characterization of what the ALJ did was just a mild admonishment to focus on the issues of the case. The other examples that were cited were related to counsel's questioning of Mr. Keith, who's asking Mr. Keith about his current medications. What medications are you taking currently? And that was at a 2002 hearing, and the ALJ advised counsel that Mr. Keith's condition in 2002 wasn't an issue because it was the only issue before the ALJ Velasquez was whether Mr. Keith was disabled prior to September 1982. And he admonished counsel to focus on the relevant issues. That's clearly not the kind of conduct that can support a claim of ALJ bias. And, you know, Mr. Keith is asking the court to set aside the ALJ's findings based on basically these three things. The ruling that the ALJ's refusal to remove Dr. Hudson from the hearing, this was just a discretionary, routine, judicial ruling. The other instances cited in Mr. Keith's brief were just mild admonishments. These do not provide a basis for setting aside the ALJ's findings. Mr. Keith hasn't made any arguments at all about the merits of the case. He hasn't made any effort to show that, for example, to show that Mr. Keith was disabled prior to September 1982. He hasn't made any effort to really analyze Dr. Hudson's testimony and show that it was inconsistent with the evidence of his condition prior to 1982. In fact, the record shows that the ALJ's findings and conclusions were reasonably drawn from the evidence. The district court concluded that there was no evidence of bias, and the commissioner urges this court to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Skidmore. Mr. Majeski, how much time? You have 1 minute, Mr. Majeski.
Excuse me this bit of hyperbole. I made Mr. Keith a solemn promise that I would follow through with this. I have kept that promise, and for that I thank you very much for this opportunity. Mr. Keith was the poorest and one of the most pathetic people I've ever met in my life. He didn't have much going for him, but I like to think that he had me going for him. He has this system going for him. And I think Dr. Hudson, Judge Drucker, and Dr. Hudson, Judge Velasquez are tied together, and the court did address Dr. Hudson's testimony before. I think it was integral. If you want to avoid the appearance of impropriety, why not just go ahead and have another medical expert? It would have been just that simple. A stroke of the pen, he could have done it. Avoid the appearance of impropriety. That's what we talked about before, and that's all he asked for this time. That's all we're asking for again. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Majeski. Case will be taken under advisement.